Services and Housing on Monday, March 18th, 2013. And I will open up the work session on House Bill 2349.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2349 has a revenue statement issued and no fiscal impact and a subsequent referral to tax credit. It extends the tax exemption for single unit housing to 2025.
Great. Representative Gunberg, oh, question?
No, maybe he'll answer it. I'm just wondering if we're considering the amendment.
Yes.
Representative Gunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 2-2013.
Representative Gunberg moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 2-2013. Any discussion? Representative Gillum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could someone refresh us on the ones before we vote?
Yes.
Thank you.
Generally speaking, Madam Chair, the Dash 1 amendments remove this distressed area. It kind of clarifies that.
Representative Fagan, would you come up and explain that? Thank you for coming today.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Shamia Fagan, State Representative for House District 51. And I was the proponent of the original, proponent of the Dash 1 amendment, which does, as the committee administrator said, just removes the requirement that this program only applies to distressed areas. As we discussed before, it provides the opportunity for other cities other than the city of Portland to take advantage of this program if they so choose. If a city does not wish to engage in this property tax exemption, there's no requirement that it would need to, but it removes that distressed requirement so that other cities can participate, and also so that within the city of Portland, that the neighborhoods that are bearing the primary, they're the primary place where these homes are put, East Portland and North Portland, which, because they're the only areas that are officially designated as distressed, they would not be, under the Dash 1 amendment, the only places where these homes could be put going forward. And so it removes the requirement and allows the city of Portland to choose anywhere throughout the city to put these, and also allows all cities throughout the state of Oregon to avail themselves of this program if they so choose.
This is permissive. You've stated that. I just want to make clear.
Madam Chair, yes.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, Representative.
Madam Chair, just really quick here. Representative, if you remember, Representative Fagan had left, and her legislative assistant was attempting to fill in a little bit. But one of the concerns I had was, where was the League of Oregon Cities on this? And they're okay, so.
Thank you for clarifying that. Any further questions? With that, any other further discussion or objection? If not, the amendment is adopted. Representative Gunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2349 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Tax Credits be rescinded, and that a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue be added.
Representative Gunberg moves House Bill 2349 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to tax credits be rescinded, and that a referral to the Committee on Revenue be added. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Discussion. I think with the amendments that we've made this a better bill, but during discussion I had also asked the question of not only removing the words distressed, but also removing the words cities to open this up to participation by unincorporated areas. I'm going to support the bill. I think it's a worthwhile change, but I hope when it gets to our colleagues on the other side, they consider some additional tweaks.
Great. Good. Thank you very much. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Debbie, would you call the roll, please?
Chair Tomei?
Aye.
Vice Chair Tomberg?
Aye.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Kinney-Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? I'm so sorry.
Well, she wanted to be on our committee, but she bailed out on us.
Let's see if she calls my name. Representative Gilliam?
No.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
I'm sorry, I'm having to start over here. Representative Kenny Guyer.
Aye.
Representative Wisman.
Aye.
Representative Whitsitt.
No.
Vice Chair Gumberg.
Aye again.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Chair Tomei.
Aye again. Okay, the motion passes. Thank you.
Why do some people get two votes?
Okay, I close the work session on House Bill 2349 and open up the hearing on HCR 26.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 26 has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact issued. It urges Oregonians to unify efforts to support programs and build communities that ensure a healthy environment for raising children.
Thank you. Please. Welcome back to the Human Services Committee.
Chair and committee members, thank you very much for hearing this bill. I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. I'm joined at the table today by some good friends and supporters of this resolution. What we're asking you, committee members, is we have nearly 75,000 reports a year, more than 11,500 victims of child abuse and neglect in Oregon. That's a terrible report. And we're asking you to pass this resolution, which basically makes April National Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Great.
So any questions? And I have my colleagues to talk about their involvement. If you remember, most of the members here, we passed a bill last session, allowed us to have a Keep Kids Safe license plate. And so we'll be advertising that during the month of April, too, to help sell it. And the funds from that program go to child abuse prevention programs. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Good afternoon, Chair Tomei and members of the committee. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32. And this resolution has concurrent Resolution 26. I also support wholeheartedly. I've been working in the child abuse prevention sector since 1977, I believe. And I am happy to lend my support to this commemoration of the month of April as Child Abuse Prevention Month. A lot of activities will occur. As you recall, in the past, some of the older members, I'm not meaning that in any disrespectful manner whatsoever, will remember seeing on the mall blue and silver pinwheels, and the Children's Trust Fund of Oregon traditionally puts these pinwheels out to commemorate children who've been abused, to remind people of what we all work toward. And you also may have seen down at the courthouse in Marin County little blue ribbons tied on the tree. And each one of those represents a child who's been abused in this area. So this is something that we do every year. We are happy to answer any questions you may have about child abuse and neglect in Oregon. And I no longer sit on this committee, except I did just for a few minutes. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for allowing me, although I was a little disappointed I didn't get to vote on that bill. But I hope you can see to approving this concurrent resolution today, and I'm happy to answer any questions, too.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's nice to be before you. I'm Brent Barton. I represent Oregon House District 40. I'm here to testify in favor of this bill for the reasons that my colleagues have already described. I know that there is often a sentiment in this building that resolutions don't do much, that they don't have the force of law like some of the legislation, the policy bills that we work on. Acknowledging that, I want to assure you that this is not a waste of our time. This is part of a coordinated effort that's going to go on throughout the month of April between a series of organizations promoting child abuse prevention, promoting information, both policy, just medical information, best practices data, and also promoting the Keep Kids Safe license plate, which I actually got to put on yesterday. It's pretty cool. Having said that, I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time and hearing this, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions of any of these witnesses? Okay, with that, thank you very much.
Can we hope you'll move the bill, Madam Chair?
Yes, we hope we will. Is there anyone here who wants to testify on this bill? We had nobody sign up. With that, we will close the public hearing on HCR 26, and I'm going to open a work session on HCR 26. Colleagues, usually I wait a couple of days before we have a work session. This seems sort of self-explanatory, and I think we do this every 2 years, so I'd like to have a work session today. So, Representative Gomberg.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Resolutions aren't always a waste of time, and I'm not going to waste any time today.
Great.
I'll move the House Concurrent Resolution 26 go to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Gomberg moves House Concurrent Resolution 26 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gallegos.
Sure. Yes.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Yes.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Wisnett?
Aye.
Representative Whitson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gomberg?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Clerk
Flamay? Aye. The measure passes.
Who?
Oh, sure. Wisnett, yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Representative Wisnett will carry that. I will close the work session on HCR 26 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2872.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2872 may have a revenue impact and it has a minimal fiscal impact. It directs the Oregon Department of Administrative Services in consultation with the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department to submit report related to outstanding bonds issued at request of Housing and Community Services Department in the event that OHCS undergoes reorganization or abolishment. It requires submission of the report to the Interim Legislative Committees no later than December 31st, 2013.
Thank you, Regina. Okay. Do we have anyone signed up for this?
If you're not sure, just say sure.
Madam Chair, yes. Margaret, would you come and speak to us about this bill? Thank you.
Chair Tomei and members of the committee, my name is Margaret Van Bleed. I'm the Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. This is a bill, as I understand it, that was put forward by Oregon State Treasury. And it's really a place for holder to make sure that in any sort of reorganization that my agency undergoes, that we really protect the piece of our business which relates to managing our bond indentures. And it's really just a call out that that piece of our business has its own sort of fiduciary and legal obligations connected to it. And it's very much in keeping with what I intend to do and what I understand the Chief Operating Officer intends to do in terms of making sure that that piece of our business is safeguarded and not lost in the shuffle, if you will, in any reorganization. So we have done a bit of a summary, and I think you're getting that piece of paper distributed. It's very much in keeping with what I've been saying about this piece of our business, and I see no issues with the bill.
Thank you. And this is the two-page
correct
material from you. You probably have it in the OLED. Do you have this also, the printed copy?
Okay. It's a bonus.
Any questions? Yes, Representative Whitson.
Yes, I was wondering if you could estimate the totality of your outstanding bonds at this time that are specifically related to this.
Chair Tomei and Representative Whitsett, excuse me. I believe the outstanding bonds are a little over $3 billion, including single family and multifamily. So it's a big number. And those are bonds that have been originated going back to the 1970s.
So are we paying debt service on $3 billion worth of bonds for housing and
community services?
Chair Tomei and Representative Whitsitt, that's a great question, and the answer is no. The bonds are repaid by revenue streams off of the properties and the mortgage payments made by the homeowners. So we issued this tax-exempt debt and then turn around and loan those proceeds to homeowners and also to developers, and it's the mortgage payments that they make that make those bond payments. A segment of that is in fact a general obligation, but we haven't tapped the general fund for that because the underlying properties are making the payments. But otherwise, they're known as revenue bonds, and they're monitored closely by rating agencies and our financial advisors to make sure that they're sound.
Representative Whitsitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director, are we going to see a similar bill on the rest of your budget? Now, the governor, or the Ways and Means Chair, also put your next year's budget on hold, or so they won't be used for other things? Because
Chair Tomei and Representative Whitsitt, I don't believe we're going to see a similar bill for that, other than our budget bill. But I'm not actually sure of what that process looks like, to be honest.
Follow up. Director, I think you and I both last session were concerned that there's been a lot of money given by the banks through the federal settlement, foreclosure mm-hmm. settlement, to address distressed homeowners' situations. Correct. And I still, are you watching that money for us? Is that money still there? Has that money been swept for other pressing needs of the state? Or is there any way to protect that money to be used for what purpose it was intended? Thank you.
Yeah. Chair Tomei and Representative Whitsitt, the money that we have for this biennium is being used for the intended purposes. The governor's recommended budget did continue the programs for counseling, outreach, and legal assistance, though at a smaller level into the next biennium than what we're experiencing, what we have this biennium.
Madam Chair, if you'll give me one more follow-up,
Absolutely.
Please. Director, I think I'd hope that that all would be used. I'm probably realistic enough to know it won't be up. I'd hope that maybe at the end of the game we'd know how much was used and how much was not used for helping distressed homeowners. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Any further questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've been alerting us since you've been coming to report that there's going to be a reorganization. Mm-hmm. So I guess the in the event of is more of a when than possibly this will happen, and the report's necessary for what you see to be changes, major changes coming in the organization of your department.
Chair Tomei and Representative Gilliam, I think that's accurate, although I don't want to presuppose the outcome. I think it's possible that the agency is sort of disbanded, if you will, and that its component parts are housed in other places in state government. But what's clear is that we want to continue to do the bulk of the good programs that we're charged with administering. The question is, who's in charge and what does that service delivery mechanism look like? I think what stands out about the bond business is that it is unique in its potential impact on the state's bond ratings overall. And so this is an extra effort to say, let's not subject that to a lot of uncertainty, if you will, in the market, and let's make sure we protect that and have full transparency and a real commitment to make sure that our fiduciary obligations are continue to be met at the highest levels. So I think this fits with that, and whether there remains to be an agency that looks like mine, you know, 3 or 5 years from now, I think is an open question, but I think this doesn't presuppose any particular outcome.
Madam Chair, this seems kind of an odd assignment. I don't think it's maybe inappropriate, but it seems an odd assignment for our committee.
Well, I think it's because we're housing. We're right. Human Services and Housing.
I'm glad we're going to Ways and Means. I guess my question is Ways and Means going to just, it's not because of costs for the report, mm-hmm. more of oversight.
Correct.
It's more appropriate for Ways and Means, and if that's the way we're headed, I suppose I'm fine with it.
Thank you. Any further questions or concerns? So, Margaret, what will happen if this bill doesn't pass?
Chair Tomei, if this bill doesn't pass, I still fully intend to orchestrate any kind of a transition in a way that would hold true to what's articulated here, that we continue to you know, stand up to and perform our fiduciary obligations, that we don't shortchange the good professional staff needed to do this responsibly. So I think we continue to intend to operate in this way. I think the treasurer's office really wanted to just make doubly sure, and they're not here today. I'm not sure if there was more to it, but I really don't think so. I've been in close communication with their office.
So you anticipated this?
I didn't anticipate a bill. I anticipated the need for close scrutiny of this business, if that makes sense.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think I agree with my colleague, Representative Gilliam, but also I think the next bill is what this policy committee we would be, even though that's going to go to Ways and Means too, I think this next bill is what we want to see and ask the director to submit as a report. The report on the transition of her agency to be sure that these programs are still working. So.
Is there any other information? We're not going to have a work session on this today, but is there any other information that you'd like before we have a work session on this? I'm thinking that maybe I'll invite somebody from the Treasury to come in and maybe back with Ms. Van Vliet. Representative Whitson.
It would be interesting to know the term, how to manage the outstanding bonds and maintain and monitor them, what that means. Mm-hmm. So I agree it would be really good to have somebody from Treasury, since that's where it's going
to be. Do you have any response to that?
I agree.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much, Margaret. Appreciate you coming. I assume there's nobody else who wants to speak on this bill. Having said that, we'll close the first hearing on House Bill 2872 and open up. We're not hearing 20 today, colleagues. So now we'll open up the hearing on Senate Bill 203.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 203 has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact, and it clarifies that low-income customer is defined by Public Utility Commission by rule. It declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Thank you. And we have two people who have signed up to testify. John, is that Cray or Gray? Cray? Thank you. Brant Wolf? Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is John Cray, and I'm the Residential Service Protection Fund Program Manager at the Public Utility Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you on Senate Bill 203. Under the Residential Service Protection Fund law, the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program is a state counterpart to the Federal Lifeline Program. The OTAP and Lifeline program provide a combined subsidy of $12.75 to help low-income Oregonians with their monthly phone bill. The state pays $3.50, while the Federal Communication Commission pays the remaining $9.25. Current Oregon statute limits OTAP eligibility to participation in the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program and other low-income public assistance program for which eligibility criteria does not exceed 135% of the federal poverty level. Last February, the Federal Communications Commission issued an order reforming the Lifeline Program. The FCC acknowledged that eligibility criteria varied among the states and identified the need for nationwide uniform eligibility criteria. The reforms included allowing additional federal low-income programs, including the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program and other federal low-income public assistance programs, excuse me, and also eligibility on the basis of income alone at or below 135% of the federal poverty guidelines. The FCC required all states, including Oregon, to adopt the federal uniform eligibility criteria as of June 1st last year. However, Oregon law did not allow OTAP eligibility based on participation in additional federal eligibility criteria and or on the basis of their household income alone. Therefore, we, the Public Utility Commission, petitioned the FCC for a temporary waiver of this rule, which the FCC granted until April 1st of this year. We respectfully request your approval of this bill to adopt low-income eligibility criteria for OTAP and Lifeline and administrative rule. This will allow us to meet the April 1st deadline and other deadlines imposed by the FCC without the need to amend Oregon statute. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Okay, Brent, we'll take questions after both of you speak.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA represents all the landline local exchange carriers, telephone companies operating in the state of Oregon. My testimony here today simply is in support of this bill. Failing passage of this bill, it would indicate, as was explained to me by Mr. Cray, that our members would then be responsible for verifying the income of folks who wanted to participate in these programs. We didn't really want to do that. I don't want to testify for John, but I don't think PUC wanted us to do that. So we support this bill. It's a good bill. It should pass, and we ask you to support it and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Brant. Any questions of either of these? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the clarifying, the need for clarifying. It doesn't necessarily expand, so that's why we're not going to Ways and Means, correct?
Chair Tomei, Representative Gillum, this bill adds federal low-income assistance programs, such as the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, all forms of Medicaid, and on the income only, and there's one other program I can't recall at this time, but there are very few customers. Most of them already qualify on the basis of this participation in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, not so much the others. So that's why there's not much of an impact as a result of this bill.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know if our witnesses can help or if somebody else can help me understand. I'm looking at the bill, and I'm reading in lines 11 and 12. The old language says that the plan of assistance is designed to use to the maximum extent possible available funding from the FCC, and the new wording says that the plan of assistance is in addition to the available funding from the FCC. And so I'm trying to understand what that change represents, whether it's anything significant in addition to the explanation we've heard of the measure here.
Chair Tomei, Representative Gomberg, the FCC in its reform order, prior to the reform order, there was a requirement that states or the phone company contribute $3.50 in addition to their federal reimbursement amount, the $9.25, it used to be $10. But right now, they don't have that requirement, that matching requirement. So right now, that's the reason for the change. It's just in addition to.
All right. Thank you.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will have a work session on this, but I'll give you a couple of days to look at it. And I just want to let you know, and we'll send a staff measure summary. If you would do this, Regina, the staff measure summary from the Senate. And Senator Beyer, who had been the Public Utility Commissioner some years ago before he came back to the Senate. And it's, a more fully explained synopsis of what the bill does. So we will, and it did pass both their committee and the Senate unanimously. So we will have a work session on this in a couple days. So with that, thank you very much, and we will close the hearing on Senate Bill 203 and open up the Senate Bill 22A.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 22A has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. It updates statutory language to describe rights of persons with developmental disabilities who are receiving developmental disability services from the Department of Human Services. It removes references to Eastern Oregon Training Center and references to operation of State Training Center by Department of Human Services. Requires the Department of Human Services to promote dispute resolution procedures for individuals receiving developmental disability services.
Thank you. Do we have any? Oh, we have a couple people signed up. Mike Malloy and Leslie Sutton. And if you would just announce yourself, your name, please.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Mike Maley. I'm the Deputy Director of the Office of Developmental Disability Services within the Department of Human Services, and here to talk about the engrossed version of Senate Bill 22, and that is really intended to be a cleanup bill, for lack of a better terminology, and looking at some statutes relative to the operation of our services that are outdated and simply in need of a revision. And just in terms of the backdrop of this, over the last 20 to 25 years, there's just been remarkable positive changes in the system for supporting people with intellectual and other developmental disabilities. That includes the closure of our state institutions, such as the Fairview Training Center and the Eastern Oregon Training Center. It includes the development of in-home services based on the implementation of the Staley settlement lawsuit. And then there's been some other changes that, like the separation of the department from the Oregon Health Authority, you know, that have made some kind of structural changes. But the net result of all of that is we have on the books now several statutes that are outdated in terms of practice and terminology. So this bill would remove references to Fairview Training Center and Eastern Oregon, you know, Training Center. It updates some terminology that we've kind of evolved to a better understanding of, and so mental retardation is replaced with intellectual disability. There's some actual technical things that are important. For example, in the statute that talks about how we determine eligibility, it refers back to a diagnosis and evaluation unit within Fairview, and Fairview, of course, doesn't exist anymore. So it is intended to address those kinds of issue in a very narrow scope. What it does not do, nor was it our intent to do, was address things like legislative policy and values and intended outcomes. That was a much bigger kind of discussion than what we intended to do in this particular bill. And we did include stakeholders in terms of the work that was done, and we do not anticipate a fiscal as a result of this.
Okay. Oh, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Tomei and members of the committee. My name is Leslie Sutton, and I'm the policy analyst for the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities. The Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities is a federally mandated state council on developmental disabilities that engages in advocacy, systemic change, and capacity building to accomplish our mission, which is to improve the lives of Oregonians with developmental disabilities. And I'm here today to talk about that we support Senate Bill 22A. It's, as Mike described, was generally described as a cleanup bill that removed outdated statutory references and also prescribed rights for people who have developmental disabilities within the statute itself. We were consulted, as the council and all and many other stakeholders were consulted on this prior to the concept. And we also support amendments that you should have here today that talk about adding statutory language that describes the values which are the foundation of this system. And in fact, it was again something that we've discussed with DHS and with other stakeholders throughout the development of this concept. We believe it's important to include a value statement because it really provides guiding principles that will drive this system. And it drives the rights section, which is included in Senate Bill 22A, and also all of our current services and supports for individuals with developmental disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Wisnik.
Thank you. Yeah, just for my clarification, I remember one of the early sessions, I really felt good about we passed a bill that said you changed, instead of saying disabled people, you said people with disabilities. Is that part of this still cleanup?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Wisnett, I think those were some prior changes that were, I think, permeated a previous attempts to clean up the bill. So I think those are included in this.
Thank you.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to confirm with Mr. Mealy, is the department comfortable with the amendments, that dash one?
Yeah. Chair Tomei, Representative Gelser, the department is, in fact, comfortable with the amendments as proposed and written.
Thank you. I think the dash two is Representative
dash
Gelser.
Dash two, sorry.
Okay, all right. I just want to clarify. Any further questions? Representative Whitson.
I was wondering if you're going to, throughout statute, change the terminology to intellectual disability throughout all of the statute, and if there's a cost associated with going back through everything and changing the term.
Chair Tomei, Representative Woodsett, I think much of that has already been done, is my recollection. So I know that this has been an ongoing desire to make sure that our language is up to date. So I think most of the stuff that we would refer has been updated, and if not, will be in just the regular course of business.
I had one other thing I was wondering. Where can I find the rights statement for, you know, that you're referring to? Is it in, like, just one location, or is it throughout the...
Yes. Chair Tomei, Representative Wisnett. It is, and I'm looking at the original Senate Bill 22, not the A in Gross, but if you look on the very first page, under Section 1... number two, that's the beginning of the rights statement. Okay, so it's either at the very the bottom of the first page or at the beginning of the top of the second page.
Okay, all right.
Okay, and just to further reference, it is a change that is reflected, where we're changing from is on Section 27. In Section 27, and again, for me, it's... on page 18 is the draft that I'm looking at, but it'd be section 27, and that was more of an amalgamated rights statement around people with developmental disability as well as people with needing mental health supports. And what's done is those are separated out and then just the wording updated, but the body of them are basically still stated.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Gelser.
Can I just make a comment about the amendment? So one of the things that the amendment does is make a deletion, and I just wanted to point it out, because Mr. Mealy said we've come a long way in 25 years, and this statement in particular that we are deleting is an example of that. Under the current statute that we are changing, it required that every year there would be an assessment of every person in the state with an intellectual disability or another developmental disability, and it goes on to say, this assessment shall measure the degree to which a family with a member with an intellectual disability or another developmental disability demonstrates enhanced caregiving and nurturing capacities, and then required the results of that assessment to be delivered to the legislature. And I just think it's important to note how we're moving away from that place and recognizing that disability is a natural part of the human experience, and that being a family member of a person with a disability does not require any enhanced capacity of any kind.
Thank you, Representative. Any further comments or questions? Thank you very much. I think we will have a work session on this later this week. Gives you some chance to look through the bill. I think it's how many pages? 73 pages? 80-something? Lots of pages. How many? What's that?
46.
46. Okay, thank you. All right, with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill or Senate Bill 22A. And any other business of the committee? Have I done everything? All right, thank you very much. With that, we'll close the House Committee on Human Services and Housing.